All right, everybody, welcome in to signing day. I don't know. Do you say 24? Do you say 25? It doesn't officially matter, I guess. We'll worry about the semantics of it. But I know, you know, it's for the class of 25. We're doing it in 2024. Yes, some people, they could sign in 2025 if they would like to. Not sure very many people are going to do that. But if you're here watching this today, it's probably because you're a K-State fan and you're probably here for a couple of reasons. One, you want to know about all of the new Wildcats that are going to be a part of this class. And most of you are probably also interested to get a little bit more of the lowdown on Lincoln Cure, as that was the saga going into signing day. And I don't know that K-State has had signing day drama like this ever, maybe, with this caliber of recruit. And then you consider what you're having to do, where it's going right up into the minute, and is he going to sign? And also you're competing with Oregon, who happens to be the number one team in the country right now, one of the favorites to win the national championship. And in addition to that, Dan Lanning just might be on his track to being the best coach in college football. So there were a lot of things that played into that, and we'll definitely hit on that today and also dive into all of the other members of this class and some of the other things that stick out about it. As I was putting the show together, it's going to be, I think, bigger and longer than anticipated. So we were going to have RJ Collins, our interview with him, play during this, but we also ended up going longer with RJ last night. He was great to get to talk to. So about 15 minutes with him. All of our interviews with some of the members of the class will be going up throughout the day tomorrow. So you can start your day with RJ tomorrow at 6 a.m. is when that video will go live. And he had a lot of great things to say, basically explaining why he chose K-State, why he shut it down, and also what he was looking to do in his free time in Manhattan, which I don't know that I could have. Well, I could have seen one of them coming. I didn't think he would say it. And then the other, just great answers by him. And you can tell, I told him last night, he's fast, and he was one of the guys that immediately was going to bat for the team on social media this year. I think that already made him a fan favorite, but once people watch that, you're going to have even more admiration for RJ Collins. So that will be coming. And then later today, Drew and I are going to talk to JoJo Scott, a DB from Florida, a guy that when he committed, Drew was really, really high on. And then Dylan Duff, the quarterback of this class, which is quite the honor. And Chris Kleiman had a lot of good things to say about him today. So we will get to all of that throughout this week. Plenty of coverage with signing day. But before we do that, Drew, I'd like to remind everybody that the holiday season is here. And if you're like me and you procrastinate on both getting your passport taken care of and getting gifts for loved ones, throw all that out the window. Do it all in one, because with the holiday season here, this is your chance to give the gift of Ireland. Whether it's for yourself or the Wildcat fan in your life, an incredible trip to Ireland for the Aer Lingus College Football Classic is the perfect way to kick off the 2025 season. Enjoy all the sights, sounds, and excitement of Ireland while cheering on K-State in one of college football's most unique settings. Get ready for a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Visit cats2ireland.com to learn more. That's cats, the number 2, ireland.com. So, all that is out of the way. Let's get to what the people are here for, what they're excited about and interested in. And that would be talking about Lincoln Cure, who comes through as one of, if not the highest rated recruit in K-State history. Our On3 database doesn't go back as far to make sure we can confirm that necessarily, but he's up there. He's got five-star status from 24/7. He's flirting with it in the On3 industry ranking, but this was a big get for K-State. We knew that back at the start of July when he made his verbal commitment, but then Oregon was just going to keep hacking away, trying to make sure this thing happened. And after he took his visit over the weekend, and again, this was a totally different recruiting cycle than usual for these teams, because they in past years are a couple of weeks in between the season and signing day. And so these coaches would get out on the road. I mean, we talked about it earlier this week, but think of how many times we'd see the pictures of coaches in living rooms with recruits in the build-up to signing day. That couldn't happen this year. The communication could only happen over the phone. So he took his visit to Eugene. It was the Oregon coaches that got the last in-person looks at Lincoln Cure, and it seemed like they had the lead for a little bit. really, there were a lot of signs behind the scenes that kind of indicated that Lincoln Cure would be a Duck. And he later said today that, yeah, he had the Oregon graphic made, but at the end of it, he stuck with the Cats. He signed with K-State. What does this mean for Chris Klieman and his team? And then also, what was your perspective of the whole Lincoln Cure saga over the last 4 days?
Yeah, it's big time for K-State. And I'll start off the show by potentially like pissing off people, I guess. But Lincoln Cure is the highest rated commit in K-State history. I don't care what recruiting rankings look like in the early 90s or in late 90s. Like, recruiting sites back then and what recruiting is now could not be more different. So, number one, he is, for my money, the highest ranked recruit in K-State history. And it's a big time win, because when you can do that, you're making history. It's always a big deal. And then you also look at who is involved. Oregon is the number one ranked team right now in the college football playoff ranking. They're going to be one of the favorites to not just win the Big Ten this weekend, but to win the national championship. You also look at what Oregon is doing. And when they get late in the cycle, it feels like they typically bat 1,000. No team ever bats 1,000, but like, when Oregon gets late and there's a guy that's potentially on the flip, especially with Dan Lanning, it feels like they always get it done.
Well, look no further than what happened today, where they flipped a five-star quarterback that was committed to Cal, and he's now an Oregon Duck on signing day. I had spent plenty of time over on Scoop Duck the last couple of days to see what they thought was going on with the situation. Nowhere in that process did I notice anybody talking about this quarterback from Cal. There were receivers, there was Lincoln Cure, there were other players in the country that they thought we might flip, we need to hang on to. This quarterback came out of nowhere, so that's exactly what you're talking about right there.
Yeah, it feels like when Oregon is involved that they typically get it done. So for K-State to buck that trend is a big deal. And I wish that it was more of a big deal nationally, because I know that it sounds silly to be like, well, of course he just signed with the school he was committed to, but it's a big deal because who was involved, I think. And then from my perspective, this whole recruitment has just felt like 3 years in the last 3 days. I've worked about every angle I could possibly think of. We got to today, and the three of us were like, we have no idea what's going to end up happening. And then it's not even a fax anymore. The financial aid, like signing thing or whatever, went through for K-State. And then that's pretty much the first time that everybody knew. And it was a fun moment to really kind of be on that side, because like you said, K-State hasn't really had a recruitment like this, especially for a high profile guy. Like, the closest that I could maybe get to was like when Daniel Green signed and committed in the same day. But like, that wasn't even like, there wasn't drama. That was just like way out of left field. K-State ended up with a 4-star linebacker from Oregon, Daniel Green. So like, this was like true drama. And let me tell you, I don't know how like the Texases of the world and the Oregons of the world do this like every year, because just doing this once was pretty tiring on my end.
Yeah, I forget who it was over on our boards that made the comment about, I don't know if he was jealous or upset at just how nonchalant Oregon fans were about, oh, we got to flip this guy and we got to protect this guy. And there's like 5 4-stars and 3 5-stars that they're worried about. Yeah, we'll see if we can get this done. It's like, we just want to hang on to our one that we got right here. And K-State and their staff did just that. Before we go any further talking about Lincoln Cure, let's just have Chris Klieman explain it. So this was his initial comments on Lincoln Cure today at his signing day press conference, which, by the way, once we're done here, you can go check out it in its entirety. Went about 30 minutes discussing the class and everything that went into it here on the KSO YouTube. But this is Chris Klieman on Lincoln Cure.
I'm really thrilled. You know, you get a 5-star in-state, and there's not many of those that come from the state of Kansas. And thrilled for the Cure family, thrilled for our program, fan base, whatever it may be, that the kid did a great job. I thought Lincoln did a good job of doing his due diligence, and that's what young men are doing now, and I'm good with that. There was conversations the whole time, but in the end, it came down to what his heart told him it was going to come down to, of where I committed to. I went through this whole process in the summer and found the school that I wanted to be at, and how we're going to utilize him. He can be a flex guy. He can be a kind of a pseudo wide receiver as he develops from a weight and strength standpoint to be an inline tight end. I think that his versatility is going to be so important for what we do offensively, and we can highlight guys like that. And the fact that he's just, he's one of the best athletes in the country, not in the state, in the country. Speed, size, strength, ability to jump, run, all those things. So we're excited about getting him.
Okay, so we'll talk about Lincoln Cure, the football player now. There's all the other stuff that plays into it. We have a little bit more to clean up on with that at the end. But everybody knows, the size is right there. 6'5", 225. That is a big human being that can move at a very good pace. He's a state track champion at the 3A level with Goodland. But Chris Kleiman in there mentioning that he's a guy that can be used not just as a tight end, especially early on, as they're trying to maybe get more weight to make him more of a prototypical tight end. So what do you make of what Lincoln Cure will look like as a player at K-State, and how the Wildcats might use him, which tying into that would then also include him possibly seeing the field as a true freshman next season?
Yeah, I think that what Chris Kleiman said is probably going to be what ends up happening with him. And I think that it makes some sense even when he gets up to like that 240, 250 range, which is why I've called him like the Kyle Pitts from Florida, because he was that 240, 250 type and about 6'6", but still would be split out wide because he has wide receiver skills. Lincoln Cure has wide receiver skills, and he won't probably play on the outside a lot, but I think that they could manipulate him and get him good matchups in like the slot, where he could be lined up on a linebacker, then get him out wide, and he's just bigger than another corner or two. So he can do a little bit of everything. And I 100% agree with Chris Kleiman that Lincoln isn't just one of the best athletes in the state. He is one of the best athletes in the nation. Like, look at his measurables, and then look at how fast he is, and then look at the kids that also run and do the hurdles that he does. He is like three times their size and is just as fast, if not faster, than a lot of them. So for him to be able to do that is world-class athleticism. And I think that once he gets onto campus, I don't know if he'll play right away like we do the Ireland ad read. I don't know if he will play in that Ireland game.
I about bet he gets at least one snap in that game.
I just don't know if he does, because he won't be arriving on campus until June.
True.
So that might be the deterrent, but I think that there is definitely a path to where he doesn't redshirt.
Size and the talent is there, though, to where that's a guy that you can have just a few plays a game where he doesn't need to know anything. You just need to let him go be an athlete, which he is.
No, that's totally possible. And like the longer that we've gone into this, the more I've kind of thought that a redshirt might not be in the cards, which if you would have asked me that probably 6 or 7 months ago, I would have said that he's probably only going to play in 4 games in a redshirt, but now I'm kind of thinking that he is probably another candidate to not redshirt. There's a couple in this class, and we'll hit on those guys later.
Yeah, we've got a lot of other guys to get to, but we talk about the process, the drama that was with it. Chris Kleiman kind of alluded to it. He had no issues with how Lincoln Cure handled this, said he was doing his due diligence. This is his perspective on the timeline of how all this played out.
Okay, let's go back on this now, D. Scott. When I knew he was coming was the last weekend of the OV period in June, right? That's when he told me he was coming to K-State. And we all know that all these kids are still getting contacted throughout the season. Everybody we signed got contacted, not just Link. Everybody we signed got contacted throughout the season. But we shared a really special moment, he and I did, in the bleachers here. It was really cool. And he knew that this was home. Okay, then we go through the season, and a lot of things transpire. I was able to go out and watch him play, which was really neat for me. Coach LePack went to Goodland prior to us going to Colorado, and that was fun to see him perform, continued conversations and stuff. I knew that a lot of other people were having conversations with him. And I gave him some space, too, over the last week. I gave him some space to figure some things out. He knew how I felt about him. And then whether it was last night or early this morning, I think it all probably came back to him that, you know what, this is the best place for him, and I'm going to stick with it. Yeah, he'll probably explain some of that. I don't know exactly the time for him, but obviously this morning was a we were real excited.
So we talked a little bit about that earlier today, DY and I, when we did a little breakout just on Lincoln Cure and coming through with the signing for K-State. But to me, there was always two possibilities of how this played out. It was, okay, Oregon gets the last crack at him, and in a pressure-packed decision moment, doesn't have much time. He ends up going, I can't take my chance of missing out on this. I have to do that. But the one that I thought had the better possibility of happening, and this goes back to what you've said from the very beginning of this thing, Drew, K-State was the first offer. They were the first for a lot of things here. They were obviously the first to get the commitment. And in the end, all those things that seemed so small at the time won out in the end, because I think it becomes really tough for a guy like that that already has so many things telling him that K-State is the right answer. Like Chris Kleiman mentioned it throughout today, but he was already told in June and the start of July that K-State was the place for him, and he made that decision. And so then you get to this point now where you're still kind of going back and forth, but the last thing you have to confront there is that you've already committed to K-State, and I think at the end that was probably the winning decision that he just couldn't go back on. I think if Lincoln Cure had just taken this up to the wire, had not committed in July, I think there's a very real chance we're talking about him being an Oregon Duck today.
No, I think that's very valid, and I think that what you just said is extremely true, and I think that there is a world where if he would have been uncommitted, he's probably at Oregon. But I also just keep going back to K-State being first for everything, just kind of solidified it for him too. And kind of like I said yesterday in our signing day preview, that the longer that this drug out and the further that he got from Eugene on that visit, just the better I felt about K-State's chances. Because I think that it just would have happened a lot quicker if it was Oregon. And the murkier that it got, the better it felt about for K-State, which feels really weird when you're the team that the guy is committed to and you want it to be the murky one. But that's how this one played out, and it played out really well for K-State.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, so Lincoln Cure, you see there the On3 industry ranking, 95.82, puts him as a 4-star in the On3 industry ranks. He's 40th overall. Of the top 32 guys get 5-star status. That's how they do it, because there's 32 first-round NFL draft picks, so that's essentially how it equates out. He is number 32 on 24/7, which then makes him a 5-star there. So what I want to dive into here, because we've talked about this over the last handful of years, is K-State has obviously had a little bit of a bump in the status of which they recruit, and it's with the industry ranking, it factors in On3, 24/7, ESPN, and Rivals. And we talk about, okay, this guy has at least one service that's named him a 4-star. K-State has 5 players like that in this year's class. You can see they're On3 industry ranked profiles right there. So Lincoln Cure, obviously, in that top spot. He sits there with, he's 45th in the On3, 32 with 24/7, 69 in ESPN, 52 in Rivals. And that equates to what you see there. But then Brock Heath, Adonis Moyes, both with ESPN 4-star designations, as well as RJ Collins, all guys we'll talk about in a little bit. And then Noah King is the other industry ranked 4-star, which means that overall you pull it together, he gets a 4-star designation. He's got his 4-star status from 24/7 carrying him over. So those are the 5 guys in this class that carry that. And then you see the team rankings at the bottom. That was as of about 2 hours ago. So I know K-State, I think, has even gone up one more spot in the On3 rankings, but that's where they sit in the team rankings, which is pretty darn good when you consider what they have going on right now. So what do you make of that crop of 5 guys and then where K-State sits in the team rankings right now, Drew?
All right, time for my here's a guy segment. Brock Heath. big time legacy at K-State. I put out on his signature spotlight tweet. You could tell that I was really tired at the beginning of the day because everything was like kind of the same and all of my tweets were just like, here's info on like whatever. Then as like I started waking up more, I had like tweets that kind of were personalized for all the guys. Brock Heath, like being a Wildcat is in his blood. He is a fourth generation athlete at K-State. His dad played basketball. His grandfather played football and his great grandfather played football. So that number one is cool for me. And number two, he is very fundamentally sound, big time road grader on the interior of the offensive line, is really nasty, which is really funny. And I put this in a signature spotlight because Brock Heath is such a nice kid and such a quiet kid off the field. But on the field, he can really flip that switch and be a nasty offensive lineman. RJ Collins, we talked with him last night. He's one of my favorite guys in the class, not just personally, but on the field as well. He's super, super fast and has world-class speed. And that's no joke. I mean, he has Missouri State high school track records at his state classification, which is very, very impressive. Can do a little bit of everything on the field. Free safety might be his home. He could be a corner still. And Chris Kleiman talked about that today, that there are some guys that have safety skills that can play corner, or they can be a corner and be a safety. So he's one of those guys, can really hit too. It was really fun. The game that I went to watch him play earlier this fall at Staley, he is on their special teams, which number one is pretty rare at the high school level to see like that level of athlete and be a committed prospect that wants to be on special teams, but he does. And he just absolutely laid a kid out on the first play of their season, which was a kickoff and forced a fumble, which I thought was pretty funny. Noah King, another safety he is big. He's 6'3". I think K-State has him listed at, where is it on here? K-State has him listed at 6'3", 195. And I think that that's a very accurate measurement. He is a big, big safety. He's an early enrollee. I think that he can get up to 210, 215 pounds and probably play that jack safety or strong safety position. Can really bring it. Has good measurables, especially for his size. I mean, we talked about RJ Collins having probably like world-class speed. Noah King can run a 4.4 at 6'3", 195. So he has really good speed. Adonis Moyes, we're seeing, because K-State actually has had some continuity at the wide receiver coach position, we're kind of seeing what K-State wants at that spot now. And we're seeing what Matthew Middleton wants. And he wants guys that are explosive with the ball in their hands and that can get out in space and do a lot of things. Well, Adonis Moyes is that. Adonis Moyes was used at IMG Academy and his previous school as a jet sweep guy, a bubble screen guy, a jailbreak screen kind of guy. And I think that you'll see that probably at K-State, because we're seeing more and more that the game is really out on the perimeter and how can you get your elite athletes out in space? And they're really good at that.
There's a lot of speed in this class. We're going to talk about speed with a lot of these guys. You talk about Noah King. He is the second highest rated guy in the class. And one of those that developmentally you've talked about, the potential is there big time, but you think this is more of, there are going to be some day one possibility guys in this class, especially on the defensive side of the ball. But you think Noah King, there's a little bit more developing and he's one of those that buds a year or two down the road.
Yeah, there's probably a little bit more development with Noah King. Part of his ranking, and it's why I do agree with the four-star ranking, is that his potential is through the roof because he's such a good athlete for his size. And we'll talk, there's two things that are very common in this class, and you can really look at it with the defensive backs, especially height and speed. And those are two things that you can't really teach. And K-State has started to find their niche a little bit on getting guys like that. We saw Julius Brents. We've seen Marquise Siegel. We've seen a lot of guys go through that are long and can really run And you know, you can never go wrong with speed. And like what we've talked about before, if you're going to miss on a player, I want to miss because there was something like between the ears that wasn't quite clicking, but has all of the intangibles and all the physical tools that you could possibly want.
Yeah, you just think you lessen your chance for a bust if the guy has a lot of physical traits that work out. I think there's a lot of paths for these guys to pretty much make an impact. Moving on, we'll stick with the DBs and talk about all of them right now. Logan Bartley was one of many flips throughout this class, a guy that was committed somewhere else at one point or another and ultimately ends up with K-State. Originally was committed to Wake Forest, but K-State in the middle of the season worked things out and got Logan Bartley. So what is the word here?
Yeah, I really like Logan Bartley. The signing day superlatives will come out as soon as the class is finished up because, you know, here's some insider information here. Class isn't finished yet. So when the class is finished, the superlatives will go up. Logan Bartley, I went against the grain and against conventional thinking here. So there's always one spot that we have that is instant impact. The typical thinking is, oh, there's two junior college transfers. Why would you not put them? Because last year, I was going to put Davon Rice there, and instead I put Malcolm Alcorn Crowder because it was a JUCO guy and was like, oh, that's something that would make sense. Well, Davon Rice has actually played. So I went against conventional thinking and was like, I think that Logan Bartley is the guy that's not going to redshirt. I think that he could play every single game next fall for K-State. He can do a little bit of everything. He's a very hard hitter. If you're going to watch a couple guys' highlight tapes, I'll probably put who I'd put in my top three at the end of just go watch them. Logan Bartley is one of them. I made a joke earlier with some of my friends saying that he might lead the country in targeting calls, but he'll be a lot of fun because he is not afraid to bring it. And he's also an early enrollee. There's 14 early enrollees this cycle for K-State, which is a really big deal.
Yeah, 13 of which have already signed, correct?
Yes, and 13 have already signed. So yeah, I wonder who the
comments section.
Yeah, I wonder who the 14th could be. So because of that, I think that there is definitely a path to him playing and at least playing on special teams because I think that he is almost too good to keep on the sideline because he's so athletic. And I think that they need guys that are younger and especially in these DB as DB class, because there's just a lot of them that they probably need him to not redshirt.
All right. Speaking of a guy that a lot of people might want to see on special teams at some point, RJ Collins, we already talked about him a little bit, but again, speed is the thing that stands out here. You also said, hey, he can hit. He blasted a guy on the opening kick of his high school season and forced a fumble, but he also played some offense for Staley. And with that speed, you start to think, man, could he be a possible kick return guy in the future? What is the ceiling for RJ Collins at K-State?
I think that he has a high ceiling too, because again, you just can't teach his speed. But I think that there is a route to him being a returner. But it would be very interesting to see how that would play out, because I can't remember the last time K-State had a defensive player as their primary returner. Was Morgan Burns the last one?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like Morgan Burns might be the last one that would have done it primarily back there. So, yeah, I mean, it's been very rare recently. When you think of prior to that, it had kind of been a little bit more common that those guys had done that. But, yeah, I think that's one of those that's going to be fascinating to follow. I think the personality and then the skills that he possesses, I like RJ Collins a lot in this class. Moving on with the DBs. This is another guy that at one point was committed to another place. And it also should be mentioned, USC came in at the start of the season and was pushing really hard for RJ Collins to get out there and visit. And RJ came to the Oklahoma State game and shut it down after that point, said, nope, not worried about it. It's all the way with the Cats. But Sirius Stinyard is a guy that we talked about when he was originally going to commit in this cycle. And it seemed like maybe K-State was going to be the play. And then it was going to be West Virginia. Well, West Virginia fired Neil Brown over the weekend, and props to West Virginia. They kept their class together in a pretty solid way. I think they're going to finish with a top 50 class despite firing their coach. But one of the guys that said not so sure about this was Sirius Stinyard, and K-State was more than happy to add another DB to their class for a guy that has the skills that he does.
Yeah, I posted on the board when we kind of found out that we thought the K-State was going to end up with Sirius Stinyard. Everybody kind of talking about, like, that's a lot of DBs in one class. And my response was, yeah, but I'm not going to turn away a guy that runs a 4.3 or a 4.4. And Sirius runs a 4.35. So because of that, you're not going to turn him away. And he's really, really good in coverage. I think that him and RJ Collins are probably the free safeties of this class. Sirius Stinyard is probably a little bit closer to seeing the field right away because his body type and how he is further, just a little bit further along in his development. But I think that there's a chance that he could play next year even. This is a fun class of defensive backs, and it's probably not hyperbole to say it's the best that K-State's had under Chris Klieman. Quantity helps, but I also, if I was going to rank my where I would have some of these commits or signees now, I think that the DBs would put up a pretty good chunk in that top 10.
We got a few more DBs to get to. And I already alluded to this guy because he was one of your favorites when we talked about him earlier in the year. But JoJo Scott, another Florida commit. A lot of Florida kids in this class. What should people know about him?
So he is really long. He's 6'2 and 170, 175, I believe. It's on here right here. 175. And he isn't quite like the Julius Brents clone if he gets to where he's going to be. But he is closer to that than like a Jacob Parrish. The ceiling for JoJo Scott is really high. I really like him because he has good cover skills, can tackle well. The one question that I have with JoJo Scott and what I'm really interested in is he was the first signee in this class, if you're going by when K-State announced them. So I want to know when he woke up.
That's a great question. Yeah, I was probably slacking. I woke up just before 7 this morning, and they're already just flooding in there. So, yeah, I would not be any help on that one. But, yes, JoJo Scott is one to watch because we've talked a lot about him, and we'll get to hear from him later on today. And everybody watching this will get to hear that tomorrow. Another DB to get to, and another Kansas kid to discuss is Martell Jackson from Derby. Probably can never go wrong getting players from Derby, even though in recent years had been a struggle for K-State. They're starting to kind of turn that around now. What should everybody know about Martell Jackson?
Well, it's funny that everybody kind of talks about how K-State struggles at Derby, but you look at it and they haven't done that bad. And Chris Klieman even said that Derby has been a school that they've done really well at recently today, which kind of just made me chuckle a little bit because the board is always really funny when a Derby kid is involved with K-State. But again, really tall, really long, really fast, pretty good cover skills. Martell Jackson, I also did not know this until today, actually, so I'm slacking, that his parents both went to K-State and his dad played football at K-State, Rashad Jennings. So because of that, I think that he's just somebody that is going to be really bought in, and K-State seems to really do well with legacies, especially in-state. I think that of all of these prospects, this is where rankings are really hard because I talk about, okay, he is probably more ready to play right now, but this guy could be a dude in a few years. Like, where would you rank them? Martell Jackson has probably one of the highest ceilings in this class because he's still pretty raw as a DB, kind of like Noah King. But is probably a little bit faster than King and is a little bit longer. So because of that, he might have one of the highest ceilings, but can really do a little bit of everything. He's another guy that, again, that I would love to see a race between Martell Jackson, RJ Collins, Nunu Concepcion, Lincoln, and then guys like JoJo Scott and even Darian Whitaker for his size can really, really roll too.
Monterio Elston. We'll talk about him in a little bit, the running back in this class, which is just, it's a prime K-State running back over the last couple of years. You mentioned Martell Jackson. We should also know, and you already talked about Brock Heath a little bit earlier, RJ Collins also parents that went to K-State. So not only are there players here that we talked about, the flips, but a lot of legacies in this class too. Final DB to get to, and this is from a state that you don't always see K-State get that many guys from, but really over the last couple of years, you've had about one or two guys a class from the state of Arizona. Dom Mitchell, who is also a safety, a member of this K-State class, the 12th best player in the state of Arizona.
Yeah, Dominic Mitchell is a really, really smart player, really heady football junkie kind of guy. He is probably going to play the jack safety or the strong safety. I would lean towards him playing more of the jack safety because I think that he is a very, very smart football player, and he plays at one of the best high schools in the state of Arizona and one of the biggest powerhouses in the country. I mean, just a little heads up for you. Larry Fitzgerald's son is one of Don Mitchell's teammates, if you want to feel old.
Who K-State already has an offer out to, correct?
Yes, so the 2026 class.
Yep.
So he can really hit too, really fundamentally sound. A guy that has a lot of like academic school offers. Like I think that he has like three or four Ivy League schools. So you know, he's a smart kid. K-State saw him out of camp, really loved him and wanted him to get to OV right away and did, and ended up getting him without really any contest because really as soon as K-State offered, he kind of shut his recruitment down.
Which a lot of kids like that in this class where K-State was able to just get him to lock in and not really entertain other offers when very easily that could have been the case. All right, so that's the DBs in this class. We'll get back to the defensive side of the ball towards the end of the show. Now we can get into what everybody gets excited about. It's the offensive skill guys, and we start with the quarterback of this class, Dylan Duff. Out of St. Louis, getting ready to play for a state championship this weekend, Chris Kleiman had a lot of great things to say about Dylan Duff, and we're going to talk to him later tonight. So this is another member of the class that we're going to speak with for everybody to hear. What do you make of Dylan Duff, who you noted in the signature spotlight? You can tell the improvement from his junior season to his senior season pretty quickly.
Yeah, he can really, really spin it. And it was fun watching him at the K-State camp in June because, you know, he was already committed at that point. He didn't have to come in and go to a camp, but he wanted to and he wanted to compete. He wanted to learn from Matt Wells. And that's where I really saw the light come on for him. Even more from his junior tape to where he was right before his senior season. I really like how he can run. He can make all the throws. He can make the throws off platform really well, which is becoming a thing that like quarterbacks before, that was like a skill that you're like, oh, like that's like an elite thing that they can do. Now it's like a necessity. And he can really do that. He's a big time competitor. Chris Kleiman didn't want to undersell how well he played in their state basketball championship game last year because of how good he was. But he can make all the throws. And I think that K-State is in really good hands with their quarterback room going forward. And Dylan Duff is a big part of that.
One of the guys that Dylan Duff will be coming in with on the offensive side of the ball is JD Davis. And this is the first JUCO player that we'll talk about today. This one came together rather quickly. J.D. Davis came up, made his visit, committed. And another one where the JUCO process is always so much quicker and you never know what's necessarily going on, but really didn't give any other power conference programs the time to get involved in this once K-State did because it was an offer, it was a visit, and it was a commitment. So what should people know about J.D. Davis out of Fort Worth, Texas?
J.D. Davis is a little bit smaller at 6'1", but can still go make the contested catches. He has a pretty good release package as well. It is a guy that I'm very intrigued about once he gets to Manhattan because he's still on the smaller side of that 160 pounds. So I'm not sure if he's going to be quite ready to play right away, but I can see it there. And kind of like Adonis Moyes is a guy that once he gets out in space, that is where he's at his best.
Well, let's talk about Adonis Moyes then. One of the guys that has four-star status in this class played at IMG Academy down in Florida, Yet another Florida player. What other than the speed is there to like about Moyes?
I think that the other thing that you can really like about Moyes is, number one, that he is enrolling early, and he played at IMG Academy. So he is probably pretty far along in his development process and how he can pick up things, and the competition level won't be super like unique or different or harder for him because he's going against some of the best high schools in the country. So he probably knows what to do once he gets on campus, which will be fun. And again, at receiver, we've talked about it a few different times. The receiver room for K-State next year could be a lot different. So we'll see how some of these freshmen also end up panning out and how they play into the rotation as well.
All right. The last receiver to talk about right now is, if his brother is Casey, I guess we'll call him AC, air conditioner. Drew likes to call him by Nunu, his preferred nickname. Arian Concepcion out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Another one, fast and furious. And another one where this guy was committed to a different Power Four program. Most of you might know by now, his brother Kevin Concepcion was the ACC Rookie of the Year last year at NC State, who just so happens to be entering the transfer portal and K-State will be exploring options with. But Arian was committed to NC State, decommitted, and then chose K-State after visiting for the Cincinnati game. This is one that, because you know what the family looks like, you're really excited about. So what more can you add to Nunu Concepcion?
Yeah, Nunu is your typical slot wide receiver. He can do a lot of things with the ball in his hands. He's a little bit on the smaller side, which is probably why I lean towards him being in the slot. Is really good at running the fade route from the slot position and then just the go ball. And he, despite being 5'10 and 170, can also still really go up and get it. And there's a few plays on his senior tape where he is making catches between two or three different players. And that's something that it has really been lacking in the K-State wide receiver room, is somebody that can go make a contested catch. But he is a lot of fun. And because you know what his older brother can do, they have a pretty similar game. I wouldn't be surprised if he's somebody that's using like the jet sweep kind of game going forward.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that ends up working out. And obviously now K-State has a really nice recruiting arm in the younger brother of Casey Concepcion to try and get both of those guys in the same room. When would the last time be that you had two guys? Like, I mean, you had the Porter brothers, but like that, this would be to a different level if you were able to get the older half of this. But you don't want to undersell what Arian Concepcion is too. I think this is a good pickup for K-State because once again, you see what the older brother can do, you go, that's in him somewhere. So we'll see how it plays out. The running back of this class, Montario Elston, speed, again, the name of the game, and the perfect K-State running back because he's 5'8". So,
well, 5'8 is debatable. I saw 5'8 was put out by K-State, and I kind of...
That's what the On3 profile says, so...
Well, I'm going to go out here and get out in front and say that he is not 5'8". He's probably closer to 5'6 or 5'7". Speed has a really, really fun highlight tape. He's probably my number two behind Logan Bartley. He makes one cut and can really take off.
Yeah, it's going to be – I know a lot of people have already kind of dubbed him as their favorite in this class and a guy to watch, so we'll see how it all plays out. Moving on to the offensive line, a smaller offensive line class this year because K-State was so good at it last year. But we talked about Brock Heath earlier. Another guy somewhat in the Midwest area, Will Kimna out of Jefferson City, Missouri, a tackle, 6'5", 250. What is there to know about Will Kimna?
Well, first, I like that you say that Missouri might not be in the Midwest.
Well, you know, I like to think of, you know, once it gets outside of Kansas, I have questions.
That was the first thing that really caught my eye there. Well, Will Kimna, really tall, really long, is 265 right now. So he'll probably spend his first season trying to get up to like that 280, 290 range. So it'll probably be a little bit before we see him on the field for K-State. But really good pass blocker. Also, like every Connor Riley offensive lineman has a mean streak to him. Like, he recruits very nice kids, but when the helmet comes on, they can get pretty nasty.
Brock Heath, we talked about him at the top of the show, one of the guys that has four-star status for this K-State class out of Overland Park. And obviously the size is already there. You see a couple of these really tall offensive linemen. 6'5" is where they're checking in. It was the eighth best player in the state of Kansas this year. And if you want the thoughts on him, you can go back to the top of the show. The final member of this class of offensive linemen, somebody, again, committed elsewhere, was committed to James Madison up until recently. And today, you know, no need to do two things. Just do it all in one. Signs his paperwork, and boom, he's a Wildcat. It's Dylan Villarreal.
Yeah, Dylan Villarreal has another nasty streak to him. He is more of an interior offensive lineman, just like Brock Heath. And what's interesting about Dylan Villarreal, he is an early enrollee and has really good technique, just like Brock Heath does. Don't think that he pushes for playing time as a true freshman, because that's just something you don't see on the offensive line often. But he also works with Ben Grubbs, a former NFL offensive lineman, so it wouldn't be shocking to see him potentially push for playing time, probably after a redshirt season, though.
A lot of defensive guys left to get to on here, because K-State, just as much as they loaded up on the back end, those guys on the front end at linebacker and on the defensive line are there. And one of them, the other JUCO addition, Patrick Tacky, originally from the Bronx in New York. This was another late add by K-State.
Yeah, Patrick Tacky is probably 6'3", 6'4", 295, I believe is what he weighed in at on his visit at K-State. He is just going to get bigger. He has a frame that looks like he could get up to 320, 330. Really fun guy to root for, because he walked on at Hines Community College before getting put on scholarship there, and then K-State offering him a scholarship. So that is a unique aspect to him. And for his size, he has really good pass rush moves.
It'd be fun to see that development, and a good story there to know. You don't hear many of the walk-on JC guys that end up getting P4 offers, and Patrick Tacky is one of them. Weston Polk was one of the earlier additions to this class at linebacker from Coppell, Texas. Basically has been playing varsity football in Texas for every year possible. He may have even been playing varsity as like a six-year-old. I don't know. I remember reading the story about how much he had played down there. What should people know about Weston Polk?
Really good sideline to sideline speed. Could probably play a little bit on special teams for K-State as a true freshman. Can really, really hit. And kind of has that, I call it psycho reliever energy, like in baseball. He has that, because he will hit you and will get in your face about it.
Somebody that on the other end, you talk about knowing where to be. I remember that this was a big thing when we talked about McGuire Richmond, where just a really smart player on the field. And I was blown away to see today, you noted that he won his league defensive player of the year, on a team that featured a player that had been committed to Alabama and was going to Nebraska. So McGuire Richmond, who also has P4 bloodlines.
Yeah, super smart player. His older brother played at Iowa and was an offensive lineman there. So to get him away from Iowa, big deal for K-State. EK All Player of the Year. Chris Kleiman loves McGuire Richmond and called him one of the best athletes in the state. He's a really good golfer.
So yeah, that's what I learned today.
It wouldn't be surprising. It's not surprising that Chris Kleiman thinks that he's one of the best athletes in the state, because we all know Kleiman also loves to golf.
Yes. Darian Whitaker is an addition that came in the middle of the season that a lot of people liked when they saw the size and kind of some of the talent that was there out of Omaha, Nebraska, and from a school that doesn't really produce a ton of talent, which makes it a little bit tougher for him to be found, but the 10th best player in the state of Nebraska.
Yeah, I really like Darian Whitaker. He is going to outplay where he is ranked currently. I think that he has a extremely, extremely high ceiling. He is the third guy that I would say, if you're bored, go watch him, because he hits with authority.
A couple of other defensive ends to get to here. We talked about Texas. We talked about Nebraska. It's where these next two guys come from. Sawyer Schilke, another Nebraskan on the list. And again, another guy that was flipped by K-State. He had originally committed to Northern Illinois. Should also be noted, Darian Whitaker had been previously committed to Northern Iowa. But Sawyer Schilke, another defensive end in this class.
Yeah, so he's listed as a defensive end, but he's probably going to play more linebacker at K-State. Could be a Will, could be a Mike, could be a Sam. he can just kind of do a little bit of everything again. Really, big time tackler, big time hitter. Another fun thing about him, and you pointed it out, like this class is shaped up so well with the flips that, you know, K-State has had a power forward flips, group of five flips, and an FCS flip. Like, I don't know another school that has had something like that in the, and not just this class, but really any class.
So real quick, Chris Kleiman, start scouring who Northwestern Oklahoma State signed today and see if you can get a D2 flip in there for the hell of it. Sorry, Rangers. Didn't mean to do you like that. Dalton Knapp, another player from the state of Texas in this class that is good to know. What do you have on Dalton Knapp?
A really good pass rusher. At one point, I forgot to look before I did the signature spotlights just because with everything else that was going on. But at one point this fall, he had the most sacks, according to Max Preps, in the state of Texas, which, you know, I hear that Texas high school football is pretty good.
They do pretty well down there.
So he will be a pass rush specialist at K-State. He's only 225 right now, but K-State knows that, and K-State's okay with that because he can get to 240, 245, and kind of be like that Brendan Mott, Toby Osensami type of defensive end.
Yeah, that's going to be, man, there are a lot of guys in this class that you can see the path to how all this is going to make sense and kind of end up working out for everything. So a lot of guys to note here. And then another Texan to talk about, Brad Stanier, also from Grapevine. This is one where people probably see it and they go 6'5" on the edge. You don't see many guys that tall at that position.
Yeah, so Dalton Knapp is the lighter defensive end. Brad Stanier is going to be massive. He is probably pushing that 240, 245 range right now and looks like he could get to 280. And is also a pretty good pass rusher, good at defending the run as well. But yeah, he will be the heavy defensive end. He is much more of a Chidi Obiezer type than like Brendan Mott.
Real quick, I want to shout out Canelio, who's talking about Alva, Oklahoma, and Ride Ranger Ride. There you go. My brother knows all about the Ranger lifestyle. He golfed down there. So I've been to Alva a time or two. I feel like I've earned my stripes to make fun of the Rangers, who terrible football team. Just awful. Well,
their defensive coordinator is like 97. That's probably part of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. For those of you that aren't in the know, Jerry Glanville, former NFL head coach, you know, Mr. Sunglasses himself. Yes, he is their defensive coordinator down there. All right. Everybody's probably wondering, hey, I think there's one more guy in this class, and I wanted to end it this way because this just ties everything all together here where we talk about the legacies that are involved in this class. And Chris Kleiman said how excited they were to have a Moore in this recruiting class and to keep Moores on the team. Austin Moore's younger brother, Ashton Moore, committed to K-State when we were in Las Vegas for Big 12 Media Day. Pretty sure it happened when LeBron James and all those guys from Team USA were walking past us.
It did.
What is there to like about Ashton Moore, who you've dubbed the baby machine?
I was literally about to say, well, he'll look at his last name. Austin Moore has been a very, very good player at K-State for the past 85 years, and his brother will now be at K-State. And it's kind of like the Lockets now, where everybody's like, wow, you have another Locket? Now it's going to be, I thought that Austin Moore graduated, and it's just his brother who looks identical to him and plays the exact same way.
Begging him to just take the number 41. It should be waiting for him already.
If he does not wear number 41, I will riot.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you, you know, carve your own path, Ashton, if you want to, but no, you have two disappointed dudes right here.
You have to wear 41, Ashton. there's no carve your own legacy.
Yeah. So as we butt up close to 4 o'clock, yes, there is one more member of this class that we are anticipating. There just so happens to be a guy that has the number 4 in his name that is committing on December 4th at 4 o'clock. His name is Larry Porter from Raytown, Missouri. It was coming down to K-State or KU. If K-State is able to land the signature of Larry Porter, What does this wide receiver addition mean to K-State?
Yeah, if K-State were to get Larry Porter, they're getting a receiver that can really go up and get it. He's 6'1", 6'2", can really, really jump. Would be an early enrollee as well. Has a good understanding of the game, good feel for the game. You look at his stats this season, and they're just obscene. He had 92 catches, over 1,400 yards for Raytown. He was like Raytown's whole offense and somehow didn't win the Kansas City Metro like best receiver award. That blows my mind. But you look at him and he can do a lot. And he's a guy, despite not being ranked, that I have heard from multiple people now. So I will go out there and say it myself and try and sound smart, that they think that he will play next season.
That is very exciting news to end our player-by-player breakdown on.
Now, you're being a little bit rude to a player, and I'm not going to stand for it. Cub Patton.
Oh, yes. How dare I? Sorry. Yes, I should point out that very rarely do we get the kicker announcement on signing day, but Cub Patton from Lubbock, Texas, is a member of this class. And Chris Kleiman talked really highly of him today and basically said, yeah, he and Leighton are going to probably battle for the starting kicking job next year because Chris Tennant will not be back. Tell us what you know about Cub Patton, Mr. Specialist.
Cub Patton is an early enrollee as a kicker, which is something that you don't really see super often. And because of that, I think that he will be in the mix as the next kicker. To be honest with you, I could not tell you what his like range is like or anything, but I do have one person that was with Cub Patton because Cub Patton took an official visit to K-State because he flipped. He's another flip, and you didn't even mention it. He flipped from Air Force. But somebody has told me that he is jacked as a kicker punter. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah. I mean, look, the name we talked about it. Cub Patton is an awesome name. And I mean, Chris Kleiman was all over it too. So he at least gets it and everything, but yes, that's exciting times with K-State there. And I want to end this by pointing out that we talked about where K-State is in the national rankings right now. Currently 38th on three. This is where they sit in the Big 12 rankings. These are the Big 12 team rankings as of about an hour and a half, 2 hours ago. TCU, number one in the conference. That is because they do have a lot of four stars. They are also going to sign the most kids in the league this year. They have almost 30 commitments in their class. Colorado, probably no surprise, number two with the talent they have, sitting around 15 kids. And then Baylor and K-State, pretty comparable classes with size and the talent that they're bringing into it. And then Texas Tech at five. Houston, Utah, and Arizona State finish out the top half. A really interesting top half of the league recruiting rankings this year.
Yeah, it's a really interesting top five even, because you'd think that Texas Tech would even be a little bit higher, but I think that everything is kind of a little bit crazy in Lubbock right now. Utah being that high is kind of surprising to me. Are we going to get to the bottom half? Because there's a team that I'm going to make fun of probably.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of them that you can make fun of in the bottom half of this. West Virginia is not one of them, though. Credit to the Mountaineers for hanging on to as many guys as they did despite firing Neil Brown. They're ninth. Arizona, Oklahoma State, Iowa State, BYU, KU, UCF, and Cincinnati make up the bottom half of the Big 12 recruiting rankings this year.
Like, what are you doing, Cincinnati? West Virginia and UCF currently don't have coaches, and they have a higher rated recruiting class than you. Not that that means like everything, but it doesn't mean nothing.
No, you're right. It doesn't mean nothing. And it's not like Cincinnati's in a position where you can say, oh, we really like our roster moving forward, because they're losing some guys that like played significant snaps for them this year, but they have 18 guys in their class at the bottom. UCF only has 12 guys right now, and that number I don't know for sure, but that could easily change, you think, since Gus Malzahn is out. So how many of those guys are looking for other options on signing day? You look around, like K-State obviously did not end the season how they would have liked to and how a lot of people would have wanted them to. But you can see where there is enough guys that are coming back next year that you feel good about, and this is a strong recruiting class to build off of it. DY and I also talked earlier about you can look back to a ways in the recruiting rankings and see that K-State was not able to land any of the four-star kids in the state of Kansas up until recently. And then they've gone boom, 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 22, 23, 24, the years, the 23, 24, 25 recruiting classes. Sorry for confusing everybody. It's like a Madden video game. What, 25? It came out in 24 though. Yeah. That's something to note. Like K-State is starting to blend both the on-field success that they've always had for the most part, whether it be under Bill Snyder and Chris Klieman, to now we're starting to see it in the recruiting rankings. And the other thing that I want to point out here, and we'll be done in about 10 minutes because I did agree to go on K-Man today. Bad timing on my part, thinking I could squeeze everything in. But one of the things that I want to note, because I was curious about this, I went and I looked it up earlier. Of the non-SEC Big Ten classes that are out there right now, here are the top classes of those. Notre Dame is number one, independent. They're kind of a little different. Miami is number two, Georgia Tech number three, Clemson at four, TCU at five, Florida State at six, Colorado seven, SMU eight, Duke nine, Baylor 10, K-State 11, Virginia Tech 12, NC State 13, Texas Tech 14, and Houston 15. So of the peer schools that K-State is going head-to-head with, take out the whatever the number is now that make up the Big Ten and the SEC, K-State is right there with the 11th best class out of those schools, and to still be inside the top 40 is really impressive for K-State and shows signs that it's not just a Lincoln Cure class. This was a very strong class from top to bottom for K-State.
Yeah, I mean, this is the best I think signing day probably could have gone for K-State. I mean, Chris Klieman said that they got everybody that they wanted and added three more. So, I mean, you do the math there. That's pretty good. And then you look at this class is going to be pretty close to the 2023 class in terms of final ranking. It is going to be extremely close because I think that class is at 37 right now. K-State's class is at 38. So we'll kind of see where that goes. But to be number four in the Big 12 right now is a big deal. And I think that we're starting to see the momentum on the recruiting trail, and that has really started to build over the last few years. And K-State's in a good spot in the 2026 class as well. And I eventually I'll start to get back in on the 2026 guys. Because if you want to know what my last 2 days have looked like, I wrote all 26 of those signature spotlights, two commit stories, a big board, and a lot of other stuff for the 2025 class. So if you told me like what the 2026 stuff was starting to look like, I'm not sure if I could tell you, to be honest.
You're going to look like Worldwide Wob on our next stream wearing the wrist brace from all the typing that you've done recently.
Yeah, the names are really starting to run together. But you look at this class, and it shaped out really, really well. Sirius Stinyard was one of their top guys on the recruiting board from what Klieman said today last December. And to be able to flip him on signing day, well, I guess not flip him, but, you know, get him on signing day this year is really impressive because, you know, you got some help from Neil Brown getting fired, but also NC State had him for an official visit during the fall. And it happened, I believe, last month. So you look at that and you'd think that NC State would have the inside track. And I pointed this out, and I'll share it with everybody else that, you know, look at what K-State has done to NC State in the last 365 days. And could you imagine if KC joins his brother? Because I think that NC State would probably start to hate K-State a little bit.
Yeah, the Pop-Tarts Bowl was a real sliding doors moment for those programs, and not just like in general, but apparently right by each other. So, NC State right now kind of feels like the when you're going into a store and you can either use the manual door or the one that's automatic. Everybody's just walking in to get the whoosh. They're not using the actual push and pull anymore, and that's kind of NC State. Those are the doors, I guess, we're talking about here. But it was an impressive signing day for K-State, and certainly sets the stage for exciting stuff moving forward.
And by the way, we talk about the Pop-Tarts. Well, did you see that they're the new flavor for this year's the Frosted Cinnamon Roll?
Yeah, they're going to have three new flavors. Cinnamon Roll is the one they're bringing back. I'm a little disappointed by that. I never really thought very highly of the Cinnamon Roll one growing up. My brothers loved it. And I was just like, eh. One of the ones that was up for being brought back was chocolate chip cookie dough, which I think was a fantastic one. Like, I don't know how that didn't win, but I guess it's because guys like me didn't care enough to get out there to vote. And once again, just a great message. Do your civic duty and go vote, people, because you could decide what Pop-Tart flavor hits the shelves next. And that's how I know that it's time to conclude this broadcast. So we will have plenty of more coverage coming your way for signing day stuff tonight over at On3 and kstateonline.com. This will be up in its entirety on YouTube and our podcast platforms later, so you can go back, make sure you didn't miss anything. And again, we still think that one more commitment is coming to be a member of this class. And if you want the full breakdown for that, Drew will have it up over at KSO the second that it goes official. But that'll do it for Drew Galloway. It's going to do it for me right here. I'm 4 minutes from hopping on K-Man with Mitch Fortner and Troy Coverdale. So head on over there if you want to continue the celebration of K-State signing day. Very rare that signing days have felt this good at K-State, but it's becoming more and more of a regular thing for this to be a true celebration under Chris Klieman, which is good for the health of this program moving forward. So we're out of here. Thank you for watching and listening to the KSO show, and check us out tomorrow where we will have interviews with RJ Collins, JoJo Scott, and Dylan Duff, some of the members of this great K-State 2025 recruiting class.